Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, fresh back from New York, fresh back from the Maria Bartiromo Show, and fresh back from my battles and my continued fight for the American way, truth, justice, and the American way. And what the hell is going on in this world where the markets know no bounds? They continue to fly higher on lousy numbers, lousy details, but again, we're seeing the perverse world of Wall Street, where right now, bad news is always good news, and bad news always drives the market higher. And at the end of the day, who's to say that they're wrong? You can't fight them, and that is one of the problems. I mean, you know, I've fought them a little bit. I fought the law, and the law won. I fought the Fed, and the Fed won. You know, you have to remember, again, I'm playing very loose to a little bit to the short side, but you can't continue to fight against them. I could not buy here, right? I couldn't buy. I mean, there's individual issues I can always buy, right? That we never worry about. But as far as the general markets, I could not be a buyer of the general markets here, but I could certainly look. But certainly, as you start to look, you see stocks like Netflix, I mean, going through the roof to the moon. You know, I want to know where the earnings are going to come for all these. When it eventually comes back down to a fundamental basis, where are we going to really find the truth? Okay. If you remember Jack Nicholson from A Few Good Men, you can't handle the truth. You know, I don't know. It's really strange. It's really weird. The bond markets are just en fuego. They just go up and down like yo-yos. We see a tremendous amount of volatility there. The bond market is insisting that rates are going to rise. And I don't know that they will or they won't. I mean, I don't think that they can. That's my opinion. But, you know, the bond market is pretty big. And they are certainly betting a lot of cash on the fact that they say that rates are going to go higher. Now, I don't know that can happen. But again, I've been surprised by the strength of the market as well. So, you know, I continue to say, I think the best spot is no spot, is to be more in an observation situation right now versus actually being in the market, because I can't buy up here. I don't see the probability model. It doesn't lay out for me. Now, if we got into an extended period of consolidation up here, then I could say, yeah, maybe I want to buy here. But at the rate that we're going up and the way that we've gone up, I can't see a continuation. So I have to sit back and say, okay, what is going to be best for me and for my investing? Now, again, remember, I have a long-term portfolio, which is certainly benefiting from this market. It's just me personally, from a trading perspective, I'm not willing to get in. I think there's too many issues and too many problems that don't make a tremendous amount of sense right here, which bothers me from that standpoint of why I can't see it. Now, I'm not a fundamentalist by any means. I am a technical trader, and technically it looks like, you know, buying, and again, on a short term, if you're buying, you know, I don't have a problem, but you got to be nimble and ready to get out. But I see too many warning signs, too many things out there that suggest to me that there's problems that are coming on the way. And to quote Andrew Mellon from September of 1929, the high tide of prosperity will see us through. And of course, we all know what happened in October of 1929. And, you know, there's many of those great leaders and great quotes over the years, because one of the problems with our society is we continue to kick the can down the road, forget about what it's really about, and forget about what really is going to drive the American economy. Now, I can't see anything that's going to continue to drive this economy with the exception of free money. Now, free money is great if you are a benefactor of that free money. But how many of you, if you're a benefactor of that free money out there, you're one of the fortunate few. because basically 5% of the world controls 95% of the market. So I don't know how many of you are in that position of the 5%, but certainly we can see that things are a little bit out of whack. Now, we always know that the rich always have to get richer. That's one of the benefits of being rich. You get advantages that others don't get. But at some point, you have to bring in, either you have to destroy the middle class or you have to bring them back into play. And if they bring them back into play, the only way that will happen is if we see interest rates rise and a market collapse. Now, if that happens, great. And if it doesn't happen, you know, it will. I mean, I can guarantee to 100% certainty that there will be a correction. The only question is, at what point will that correction come from? But we see continued earnings misses. I mean, John Deere today, they missed, right? I mean, you know, and those are main staples. So how can we continue to ignore no growth, no real jobs, no real money, and, you know, costs that are skyrocketing? I mean, have you looked at the cost of beef lately? I mean, you know, pretty soon we'll be eating, everybody will be eating at the McDonald's on the dollar menu. And I guarantee you, if beef prices stay where they are, those hamburgers will shrink even smaller than they are now. I mean, it looks like bread and water for a while. And it's, you know, I say that tongue in cheek, but, you know, it's getting serious for the middle class, because no matter what, you know, gasoline prices are rising. Okay. We're going into driving season. So where does all this, you know, come out to play? How does it finally flush out the other side of the trade? But in the meantime, again, you cannot, you know, you cannot fight Janet Yellen. She's too powerful, the most powerful woman in the world. I mean, she's actually one of the most powerful people in the world, and she's a woman, so we could put her in that rank of one of the most powerful women in the world. But again, you know, monetary policy and things like that. Now, everybody's worried and thinks that they can't raise rates because the Fed is worried about their own debt. Well, let's remember that the Fed doesn't have to get out of the bonds that they own. They own the bonds. They can let them go to maturity. They are not at a disadvantage by holding. If interest rates rise, they won't make as much, but they are not forced out. And a higher interest rate just does not allow them to roll bonds out and get called. But overall, they will continue to be able to, if they have to, ride them all the way to maturity, and they'll get the money out. So they're not under any pressure here to raise rates. I don't see it, but certainly the bond market is indicating it. And the stock market is again, see, this is where you get counter indicators. With the market continuing to make new highs, they don't feel that the bond market is right. Now, it's again, at one point, this is where the rubber will meet the road. Okay. This is at one point, there's going to be, the bond market is going to be right, and then the market will finally sell off. But we have seen a pretty dramatic move out of some of the higher risk stocks by some of the big players, not by everybody, but by some of the bigger players. We've started to see some move into gold. Now, gold is not a currency, but just as a hard asset, we've seen some movement, and gold has actually tried to break out here to new levels. So we'll see. But at the end of the day, we have to just sit back and kind of hold on and kind of watch. Now, again, individual stocks, I like RIG. You know, there's plenty that I like, and there's plenty that I would buy. But as far as an overall market, I don't see it. So I know that it sounds kind of quirky, but again, individual stocks you can buy anytime, no matter what's going on. If you're finding a stock at a good level, and just need I remind anybody that you could have bought Amazon in November of 2008 at $30. By the time the market cratered in 2009, Amazon was already at 60. So, you know, individual issues can always be bought. It just depends. And that's why you have to separate the general market from individual stocks, because there will always be stocks going up. There will always be stocks going down, no matter what the overall markets are doing. And that's what you have to keep in mind. We've got a great show planned for you today. I've got Jane King coming in, and then Coach Mike Brown. So we're going to step out of here for a break, but remember to check out thebubbashow.org and make sure you also know that The Bubba Show plays at libertytalk.fm on demand. Anytime you want to listen, you can go to libertytalk.fm and check it out. In the meantime, go to thebubbashow.org and check out The Bubba Report. It's a must-have for all investors. It's the greatest information I've ever put together, and I think it's to help everybody. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break.
in this time, give it to me easy.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, and always every week at this time, I have one of my great friends and somebody who I have some tremendous respect for, who does a great job and is so worldwide that she always squeezes us in. But this is Jane King, Lila Max Media, and the Ka-Ching Report. And also, her daughter is now 6 years old over the last weekend. So congratulations, you made it to six.
Yes. Thank you. You know, when you have like 12 girls decorating flip-flops, I mean, you know, it's like that was the whole theme of the party. It was like a beach theme, all the girls decorated flip-flops. And I mean, putting on a six-year-old birthday party is like more stressful than work for me. I mean, there's like 12 six-year-olds running around all over the place, screaming, yelling. And anyway, it was a beautiful party, and I'm glad it's over.
And I thought I'd like to buy that painting she put up for $179 million. We can break the record for one.
We had
right?
quite a weekend. So we, you know, we're all over the place. I have to come back to work to rest.
The Picasso. So, you know, Jane, you and I have a common theme in mind, and, you know, we believe in financial literacy, and we also believe that, you know, most people don't have it. And so what do you think is the answer as you look and you know, I mean, again, you're very well versed in all parts of the finance and financial world, and you're based in obviously the financial hub of the world. What do you think and what do we need to do to make it better so people have a better understanding of how to take care of their own finances?
Well, you know, I do think there should be some curriculum in schools, and I think even starting early. And I know schools are swamped. They're all, you know, have tight budgets, and they're already trying to teach kids, you know, to read and phonics and math. And, you know, New York is a common core state, so we've all got to learn this new way of doing math that we teach our kids and help them with their homework and comprehension and trips and curiosity. And I mean, it's just, I know that there's so much out there, but I just believe it is so important that I think that there should be some lessons, even starting at like second grade, on simple math, even younger than that, you know, identifying coins and adding them up. And then as you get older, learning about like how interest works and, you know, and when a deal sounds too good to be true, it probably is. I mean, I think that if people would have had some base level of financial literacy, we wouldn't have had a financial crisis. I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around for what happened in, you know, 2008, 2009, and, you know, the years leading up to it. But I do think people, you know, they just didn't realize and question, well, the bank's going to loan me money, and if I don't have a job, then, you know, it's the bank's fault. And, I mean, I do think that our country suffers because a lot of people don't know anything about their own personal finances.
And don't you hate when you go to a store and the cashier has to look at the machine to get the cash tendered and give you the amount back when, you know, it's, yes. You know, I mean, doesn't that bother you a little bit? It bothers
me. We can't even do, you know, the math in our heads anymore. You know, but, you know, to me, like just a big issue is just, you know, I have two children. My son wants every toy he sees. My daughter's pretty good. She's a little more prudent financially. But I, you know, I try to instill in him that, you know, you can't buy everything you want. And I told him once, when you buy a lot of little things, then you never have money for big things, like a down payment on a home or a car that you need for work or, you know, whatever it is. And he seems to get it temporarily, but he still needs a lot of lessons. And I just think there's a lot of people like that. They're like, I want this. I want it now. I got a credit card. Let's do it.
Yeah, right. Spend away, right? And buy now, pay later. So let me ask you this, Jen. You're not, you know, I don't know how it is. You know, I don't remember when my kids were 6 and 9. Obviously, mine are both in college right now. But I'll tell you one thing that I don't like in the state of Illinois, and I don't know if it's this, you know, this throughout all country, all states and all schools. But the only way that they get money is they have to teach to the test, and they're really not teaching practical life skills anymore, and I think that's kind of a tragedy as well. What do you think, and does it happen in New York, and does it happen at that young of an age?
Well, you know, New York, as I mentioned, is a common core state, so it's very much teaching to the test. Now, my kids, they don't start taking the test till third grade, so next year, but I'm already feeling the pressure from the second grade teacher. In third grade, he's going to be expected to know this, and know this, and know this. And, you know, it's funny. There's a lot of protests that go on here in New York against Common Core. I do think there should be some testing. We should know that kids have some basic level of knowledge of math and of reading and of knowing words and understanding, you know, the English language and things like that before they move on. But there, you also stifle, a lot of times, there's just their creativity and just their curiosity. And sometimes it doesn't. You know, sometimes it's fun just go to the park and watch a worm wriggle around, and you learn something from that. So, you know, look, it is what it is, and what I try to do is expose my kids to a lot of different things where they don't have all the testing and all the drilling, just painting and playing outside and music and art and things like that. So I'm hoping to kind of supplement them with some of the extra stuff in life, because I don't think schools have the time to do it all.
Yeah, and I find that, you know, very sad, because, you know, at least when I went to school, I could get, you know, all the way through, you had, you know, things that were problems in logic and how to, you know, find your way out of certain situations. And it's funny, the other night, my son, who's 20, going to be 21, went fishing. I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "Well, I'm going to Walmart to buy the bait." I said, "Well, what happened to, you know, when we were kids, we'd go out and water the grass and,
yeah, the worms would come up.
And then the worm, and then at night you go out with a flashlight, and the worms would come up, right?" And that would be, you know, something that we would do. And you know, of course, you know, kids today, they don't get that experience. And I don't know, I think that kind of stuff is invaluable to children, because I think that kind of sets up the way we go from there. And I think it helps make you a better person. What's your opinion?
Yeah, no, I think so. It teaches them about nature. I mean, it teaches them a lot of things, how they can be resourceful. I get, you know, some of the best lessons that my son gets from martial arts class. First of all, he loves his teachers. They're all these tough guys, you know, they can kick and punch and stuff like that. So he immediately looks up to them. And they all, during his 45-minute class, they'll sit down for 5 minutes and they'll talk about things like not giving up and sticking with things and giving it your all, not coming to class and sleepwalking through class, you know, really having energy, not whining about homework. And it's helpful, you know, to me as a parent, to have like a figure like that also telling him these things. So I think kids need to hear from a lot of different sides and these life lessons. So I know it's, you know, it's tough, and teachers work hard. They do a lot of work. I'd like to see the school year extend longer. I think they lose a lot over the summer, especially lower income kids that aren't able to take classes during the summer and go to camps and things like that. I think they get hurt the most. So I'd like to see the school year changed and teachers be paid more, just the whole education thing revamped.
Oh, that I couldn't agree with more, of course. Unfortunately, part of, you know, the whole problem, the whole economic circle we're in right now, for some reason, the kids and the education system gets pounded the worst. And of course, I find that disturbing, because I think it is so important that everybody understand financial literacy. I mean, because what happens is you grow up, and then of course you have a 2008 or a 2001 or a 1987, and you don't know what hit you. And I think that becomes the problem, where if you learn some of that stuff, you're kind of prepared, knowing that those things can happen, and they do happen all the time. I mean, and that I think is very sad. But that's where I believe in the financial literacy and growing this into, you know, bringing our youth, because hopefully our youth are going to take care of us, because they're going to have to revamp, you know, all the programs that were set up years ago, like Social Security and things like that. And those things need to be fixed. And the only way you do that is by learning about it, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's really kind of frightening when you think about the financial situation our kids are inheriting and what they're going to be paying for. And as we age and we deal with dementia and Alzheimer's and all the diseases of aging, and oh my goodness, I mean, it's really frightening. So, you know, let's hope that things change and kids can learn some better financial literacy and be better than our previous generations were for us.
Yeah, because I think it's just, I think it's important. And of course, again, you came from a little bit more of it, because again, when you're in the farming community, you got to understand that, because that's your bread and butter, and there is no, you know, guaranteed job, right? You get up early and you're working, you know, long hours to make it happen. And that's always a big thing. So you're in an advantage in this industry, because you've got a better feel for all these things that happen. And I, you know, again, I'm for it. I think that it's important that we always take care of everybody, and we all have to learn so that we make it better for the entire country, because I think the country operates better when everybody understands it as well, because certainly our leaders right now really don't understand financial literacy all that well.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I do have to go, though.
I know you do.
Sorry, I know you can edit that out. Okay.
Jane King, Lila Max Media, Kaching Report, you're awesome. Thank you so much. Have a great day. I always appreciate you being on, and we'll see you later. Good luck on your next hit. We'll see you later, my dear.
Thanks, bud.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's always my pleasure to bring in the coach, my man, my friend, partner, Mike Brown from Brown Financial, Brown Capital Investment, Brown Everything, does it all, one of the smartest guys in the business. What's up, Coach Brown?
Not much. How are you today, Todd?
You know, I'm all right, man. So, you know, we saw earlier in the week that the markets have no desire to ever go down again. I mean, is there ever going to be another down day, or are we just going to continue to feast on the free money that the Fed is delivering and continue to go up forever? I mean, it doesn't look like there's ever going to be a top, and of course, we have no volatility. What are you seeing here?
I'm seeing the same things you are. It's just continues to trend higher, kind of grind its way higher. I mean, we will have down days. There'll be bear markets again. But for right now, it just, same story as the last 6 months. It just continues to grind higher. No volatility. I wouldn't want to be in a position of betting against the Fed right here. They seem to be, they're getting their way, which is just grinding the asset prices higher. So, when it comes, obviously, it'll come very, very swift. But for right now, it doesn't look like it's on the horizon, any downtrend.
I mean, are you buying, are you putting new money to work up in, here in some of these higher pricings that are way above? Are you looking at buying into some of this?
No, we have not. If anything, we've taken some profits in the energy sector recently. It's a hard... It's a hard place to put money to work with a lot of conviction, that's for sure. I mean, there are some compelling stories out there. But right now, it's a difficult place to have any conviction, when you're hovering around all-time highs.
I mean, but it's even the way we're hovering around. You know, I don't mind all-time highs, and I don't mind markets going up, but, it's so painful as it grinds up. And then, of course, you see a stock like Netflix. I mean, can you imagine Netflix, trading in the 600s now?
Oh, my. Just shows you how dumb I am. My brother is very tech savvy. And I don't remember how many years ago it was, but he told me about this great new service called Netflix and that I should try it. And so I came home and bought the service and not the stock, and the stock was at $26 then. So... Yeah, it just seems It reminds me a lot of the 2001 era when you're looking at stocks at these prices. That's for sure.
I mean, because if you look at,
I know that's a debate that's going on right now is, you know, is it real this time? Do they have real? You know, and for some of them, sure, it probably is real. But you know, for a lot of them, I can't believe that it is. So.
I mean, you look at Netflix and you look at Tesla, and you look at, you know, some of these others. Now, again, I have nothing against Netflix. I have nothing against Tesla, but certainly the multiples aren't there for somebody who's looking to buy fundamentally, are they?
No. I mean, where they're going to get the revenue to support those multiples. You know, Netflix popped higher, you know, this past week based on China, you know, them moving into China, you know. Maybe that works out, and they get the penetration that they've gotten here in the States. But there's no real barriers to entry in that market. I guess they are driving some content now, but Tesla, that battery business is going to have to take off, because I don't ever see them needing that multiple in the automobile business.
So let's talk about Netflix for a minute. I love Netflix. I mean, I have it. You know, I use it. It's, listen, you know, where else can I get, you know, two users for $8 a month, right? I mean, you know, I love the content. I love the no commercials, right? So mm-hmm. I have no problem. But now my question to you, and this is one thing that always bothers me. I look at a company like Netflix, and there's others. There's Hulu in there. There's Google. You know, there's a bunch of little ones, but nobody is to the level that Netflix is right now, correct?
No. I mean, they're an entity under themselves at this point.
But if they continue to be that and it becomes such a profitable business, wouldn't that create a hell of a lot more competition in that business? Wouldn't guys try to go in a lot deeper and companies that have deeper and better pockets than Netflix? Couldn't that create a problem down the road?
Yeah, it certainly could. I mean, there's no real great barrier to entry there. So, you know, at what point is, I don't know who it would be. Is it Microsoft? Is it Google? Do you just buy them outright if they get a correction rather than try to create the business yourself? At these multiples, I would not be a player. We are not players. We don't own it. So.
Yeah, right. And so now we look at Tesla, and of course, you know, Elon Musk, obviously one of the smartest guys in the world, because, you know, he's the only guy I know who's got two companies that don't make any money, but he's a billionaire. So,
yeah.
Right?
What were we thinking?
Yeah. I mean, obviously he's a great tap dancer. And by the way, in the Tesla car, have you ever seen a Tesla?
Yes.
I mean, they are beautiful, right? I mean,
they are beautiful cars, and the price tag on them is beautiful too.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, think about it. I mean, you go out and buy a Jeep. I mean, you know, my Durango is $50,000. I mean, you know, so, you know, if I'm going to step up to that class, I mean, pay 80 or 100. I mean, look, people buy Mercedes and things like that all every day. I mean, it's not like it's a real stretch, but I guess.
Well, that's true.
I guess the problem is how do they actually service these cars? You know, and certainly they're never going to. I don't ever see them having enough cars to support the multiples we're trading now. And they lost the California tax credit part, which was their only way of making money in the past. So, where do they go from here? In your eyes,
they've got good traction in that battery business if they're going to go anywhere. I mean, to me, that's the only place. And can they do that fast enough? No, I don't know. I don't see it. He's a very, very smart guy. I wouldn't bet against him. I don't know that I would short it, but they've got a lot of work to do to make up, you know, to make that multiple. I mean, you go out and buy Apple at 12 times earnings right now. So if you're going to bet on a fundamental story, That to me seems like a more logical place to go than Tesla or Netflix.
And speaking of Apple, I was going to go there later, but I'll go there now. So, of course, our good friend Carl Icahn once again dropped some green mail off, through Twitter. I mean, now let me ask you a question. You are a guy that is constantly hounded about regulations. Is that correct?
Well, yes. I mean, obviously, the compliance segment of our business is, you know, increased by a factor of probably five since, you know, the last crash.
So how does a guy like Carl Icahn, how do they let him get away with that? Because basically, I mean, I'm not saying he does it as a scheme, But it's certainly, if everybody hears Carl Icahn's buying it, he says it's worth $240, and you know people are going to be stepping in and buying it. What do you think of that? What is your take as an investor, as a guy who runs investments, as a guy who's licensed and has to be always abide by compliance? What is your take of that?
I don't get away with that. Basically, $240, you're talking about a $1.5 trillion stock. Now, they obviously, with buybacks and everything like that, they won't get to that that point. It could be $240 a share. And if they brought the float down enough, maybe it's only a $1 trillion stock. But, yeah, how they get away with that in this day and age? He's playing by different rules than the rest of us are, that's for sure.
Yeah, it really irks my ass, okay? Because, again, that's front-running the tape. Now, it may not, obviously it's not considered that because he's allowed to do it. But to me, it certainly is front-running the tape because, you know, if I go out and say, you know, if I'm Carl Icahn and I'm one of the biggest activist investors in the world, and I say I'm going to go out and buy, you know, Apple, you know he's already bought it, right? He already owns it. So he's basically having people jump in and buy it with him. And I'm not saying he's unloading it. Again, I'm not criticizing him any wrongdoing, but I think the whole message is a wrongdoing. I think this goes back to insider trading, which this isn't truly insider trading, but you're kind of creating that. Are you not? Is that not the environment we're seeing?
Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, back in the internet days when analysts would come out and slap a big price target on it. Amazon or Google or whatever it was, obviously there were problems with the Chinese walls and that within those companies back then. And so to me, it's a lot. It's very much the same thing, where he's just slapping a big price on it and hoping that it gins up enough interest that it goes there. Well, and you know, with the watch, maybe it will. I've seen some of their commercials recently. I think that's going to be a successful product. I wasn't sure that it was a month or so ago, but I do think it's going to be a successful product.
I mean, I don't want to take it away from Apple. I think Apple's a great company, and I have no issue with Apple itself. I mean, you know, they make great products. We're certainly not criticizing Apple, right? I think they're a good company, and they do a good job. You know, I don't know if they're a little bit overvalued here, even though the earnings multiples, because it's really hard to get a great handle on the earnings multiples right now, just because of the overall environment in which we're seeing. We know they're one of the most successful companies in the world. We know they have more cash on hand than anybody. I mean, they've got, I don't know, some like $50 billion sitting in cash in a bank and wherever the hell it is. But it ain't here because I don't want to pay taxes here. So,
it's not here in the States. It'd be nice if they could some tax holidays and bring some of that back.
Well, wouldn't it be nice if our government would just say, you know what, maybe we should, you know, free up the tax program so we get some of that money back in? Because, you know, 100% of nothing, you know, or 10% of something is better than 100% of nothing. But we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. We're hanging out with Coach Mike Brown from Brown Capital Group. And, you know, he's always got some great advice and really tells it like it is. And I think we can appreciate that. And he also does contribute to the Bubba Report. He gives you the information that you need as far from his side of the business, which is financial planning. And I think I urge you to check him out. And we'll get you his information after the break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my friend Coach Mike Brown from Brown Capital. So, Mike, we've got Apple, you know, and again, you know, I'm not a big fan of the, I will call it green mail. It's not called that anymore, but, you know, again, I'm with all the compliance. And I mean, the problem with the business today is that, you know who pays all the fees? The customer pays all the fees because, you know, when you got to have 75 compliance officers around doing nothing, it really irks and brings a lot of trouble back into the world. And of course, where were those same compliance officers in Bernie Madoff's office, right? Where was the SEC then? Of course, you know, I still continue to say I can't prove it and I'm not accusing, But in my opinion, someday someone's going to jail from a department that we would probably all recognize, because somebody had to know what was going on. Because you just can't do those kind of things without somebody knowing, especially with all the compliance around in the business today. I mean, it's really ruined part of the business, because we're just so overregulated that, you know, if you want to go to the bathroom, you got to get compliance to make sure you're going to the right toilet. And I think that's just a bad situation. But now, my next question is Amazon. What is the love affair with Amazon that has, you know, I think it's 800 at PE ratio, some ridiculous number. I mean, you tell me. I mean, this is your business. What is the fantasy, the all this stuff with Amazon? What makes it so popular? Why do funds keep buying it?
Yeah, that's one I've never been able to get my arms around. We've never owned it. It's always been the same. I mean, the PE ratio has always been, you know, in the hundreds. They've never earned money. They've never had their feet held to the fire. I mean, Bezos, you know, to his credit, he's been able to spin a yarn that everybody keeps buying, and he's not held to the same standard as a lot of other retailers when it comes to, you know, producing profits and producing earnings. And, you know, he's able to bet on the, you know, get everybody to bet on the come, so to speak. And he's been doing it for, like, 15 years now, 16 years, I mean. And, you know, obviously they suffered a little bit, you know, during the dot-com, but not to the tune of a lot of the others. And, you know, he's been able to build a massive enterprise without ever having to show a lot of earnings. So, yeah, it's not one that I've ever, we've ever owned. I don't even use the Amazon and, you know, to buy things.
Right.
So it's, I've never been able to get my arms around.
I don't understand it myself, but let's get something that we both understand and that you clearly called the bottom on this show, but oil. So, you know, now oil is back above 60. I mean, you know, we talked about it when it was back at 100. We said it was too high, and then we got down to 42. We said it was too low. And, of course, you stepped in and bought some oil energy stocks for your clientele. And are you still a fan of oil here, or is it getting a little pricey? What's your take?
You know, we took some profits over the last few weeks on that. We're not adding to anything right here. If it were to go back down 50, I think we're going to see 75 before the end of the year. But we may see 48.50 before we see 75. So if it takes a breather here and pulls back a little bit, we would go back into those positions. But I do like it. You know, if you're looking out a couple of years, you can certainly buy oil here, and you're going to be all right. But my counsel on it with us right now is we're looking for somewhere that, you know, under 50, we would be back in buying it again.
So when you look at it now, of course, Goldman Sachs has come out again. And, you know, I always say, and I don't know if you can comment on this or not, but I can. I always say that Goldman Sachs is short oil, and they're trying to get people to sell it off so they can get out already. I think they've been short all the way. I think them and Citi have been short all the way up. I just think that they haven't been able to get out, and they keep trying to talk it down. And they came out on Monday again and said that they thought it was going back into the 40s. And I'm not saying it won't go back down there, but, you know, certainly they've been pretty off kilter here lately. And it seems to me that they're just short trying to duck and cover and just get out. Can you comment on that? And if you can, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly feels like that, doesn't it? It certainly feels like, you know, they may be chopping a little bit. If you look at the inventories, you know, the inventories have come in. You know, the build and inventories and Cushing has come down. The summer driving season, you know, is upon us. So, you know, there's going to be more use. Hopefully, the industry picks up. I think, you know, we've talked about it before, that, you know, the low 40s is the floor. I don't think we're going back there. You could, but we've been very fortunate that the geopolitical situation, which we talked about, you know, a few months ago, looked pretty dicey. It kind of quieted down over there. That's always a risk that it could pop up. Then all of a sudden you are back at, you know, $80-$90 barrel oil. But for right now, I mean, we're comfortable in this. You know, I think it's going to be in a range of, you know, the low to mid 40s to the low to mid 70s. That would be my take on it. But, yeah, it certainly sounds like they may be short and you know, trying to drop on it down there a little bit.
Okay, well, here's my take, okay? I don't think that the Mideast stuff bothers us anymore because we manufacture enough oil here now. We make enough of our own, and we could certainly ramp up and make enough to cover. We don't need them anymore. So I don't know that the Mideast and stuff. I mean, I personally think at this point the $100 a barrel oil is over, but certainly I could see 75, which is what you said. I think that, you know, 75 to 80, you know, for now is probably about the max. And I don't know what happens, you know, geopolitically, because I don't think that we have that much of effect because, you know, before when we had the big effects, we were only producing 1 million barrels a day. Well, now we're producing 10. And in 5 years, we'll be producing our need, which is 18. So do you still see that as a possible geopolitical event, even though?
Yeah, not so much for us. You're absolutely right there. It would certainly have a bigger impact on Europe, which, you know, they're the biggest buyer from the Middle East right now. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that, you know, like you said, we're looking at being energy independent here certainly does take away a lot of our need to intervene in the Middle East. So hopefully that'll change that paradigm, because for the last, you know, 30 years, but, you know, we've shed a lot of blood over there and a lot of U.S. dollars as well. So it would be nice if that were not the case. And if they take the restrictions off here, where we could actually, you know, export oil at some point in time, which I think that's coming down the road too at some point in time.
Okay, and no conversation with the coach, Mike Brown, would be complete without talking about the bond markets. First of all, in my 35 years, I've never seen the bond markets this volatile. I mean, this is they're trading like crude oil's trading right now. I mean, up and down every day. Obviously, the bond traders, the fixed income market, is demanding a rate increase. What's your take of the bond movement, and what's your take of whether or not we get the increase or not?
Yeah, I think we're going to get the increase. I don't think it comes in June. I think it'll be September, and I think they're going to telegraph it. I mean, the bond market has been extremely volatile, unlike the stock market recently. So I do think we get a rate increase. I do think it comes in June. I think they're going to have to move very methodically, especially given the debt that the U.S. government has out there. They've got to be careful about that. And how do you, you know, pull stimulus out of a market while everybody else is applying stimulus around the world? So it's going to be an interesting dance that they're going to have to do. I think that's part of the reason you're seeing the volatility.
I mean, because it's just really wild, you know. I mean, these swings, and you know, because back in the day, if you were a bond trader, you had to trade size just to make a tick or two. Now, that's something that trades a full point or 2 points every single day, up and down. I mean, that's a lot of money going back and forth and flowing. So I say, my opinion is the bond market is wrong once again, because they've been wrong at every turn as to what the Fed's going to do. And I don't think the Fed can raise interest rates. That's my opinion, and I'm going to stick to that. I think the 10-year is going back down to 150. What do you think?
Yeah, that it wouldn't surprise me if that happened. I think they want to get out in front of it a little bit, but there's also, you know, you're still hearing some people banging the drum about deflation. So I think that the summer is going to have to be good, the numbers are going to have to be good, and if they are, which we can argue whether they should be or not, but or whether they will be, but if they are, I think they move in the fall.
Okay, I think that, you know, Janet Yellen may just flex her muscles just to say, hey, I can do this if I want, and I'm going to raise them. But logistically and logically, I don't see how they can, based on what's going on, you know, through the rest of the world. Now, we have had a little rally in Germany, but I know we'll see how this plays out. But as always, Coach Mike Brown, Brown Capital, you always bring a really sharp view to the markets. We appreciate you coming on the show, Mike.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Always a pleasure, Bubba. Thanks for having me.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. I've been with Mike Brown from Brown Capital. And Brown, Mike also writes for the Bubba Report, so make sure you check it out. Get yourself signed up. It's $99 a year, a minimum of 12 issues. You get Mike, me, and a bunch of others. And in the meantime, that'll do it for today. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Your everlasting summer, you can see it.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.